Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm David Clifford, and this is the GA Hour.
Hello and welcome to the GAR. We had a whole heap of action this weekend, and to help me get through it is our very own Niall McIntyre. Niall, how's it going?
Good, Lee. Yeah, can't complain. I was glued to the couch yesterday watching the GA, so in a bit of a trance after, but it was a great day.
No, we had loads to get through. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined by a fashion guru, a wanderlust traveller, Armagh hero, a Cross McLean legend, Jimmy Clark. Jimmy, how are you?
All good, lads. Appreciate you having me down.
No, we're delighted to have you. Now, the last we saw of you, you were playing soccer with Newry. Is that still about?
No, I finished up in January with Newry. It was a case of wanted a full wrap with the club, mm-hmm. and give it. Anthony Cunningham come in as the manager, and just to be there for pre-season and get a full season, mm-hmm. and commit at a full level is something I wanted to do. So luckily, they just stayed up in the Premiership, so they got a 2-2 draw on Saturday, so they're there for another year. So
good. Well, I've seen you rattle the net recently for Cross McLean, so the skills are obviously transferable still. You're living in Cross now, working on your startup business. How's that going?
Yeah, based in Armagh, it's going well. Like it's a tough gig, you know. There's a lot to it, but I suppose every day is a school day, you know, you're learning, and it's something that I'm very passionate about. And it's hopefully a launch now in the next couple of weeks or month or two. So very excited to get that going.
The club GA is a different ball game now, Jamie. We're only saying it's nearly like, I'd say, intercounty back in the day.
It is, yeah. I suppose it's one of these things where everyone's learning, and you know, I think with the media now and the amount of information out there, people are able to, and coaches and managers are obviously taking from the likes of the county team and all the information that's out there, whether it's stats, whether it's tactics. And you know, if you don't do it now, it's moving that quick that you'll be left behind as a club. And you can see how quickly, you know, the top clubs in the country are pushing on. Like there's four or five clubs that, I suppose, even last year, you know, going into Ulster, we knew that, you know, it was a wake-up call nearly against the likes of Ballybay tactically, that, you know, something needs to change here, because, you know, we can't just go out and play, mm-hmm. you know, the free-flowing football that you probably wanted to play, because, you know, just the game's changed that much.
No, definitely. And even at, like, junior level and stuff, they've all got gym programmes, pre-seasons, dietitians and everything coming. But we'll get into the county action, and it only makes sense to talk about Armagh first because you're here. We saw an interesting stat that actually Saturday's match was the first time since 2008 that a Cross McLean player didn't start. obviously Rainer Neal was on the bench and he came on, but it's an interesting stat.
Yeah, it's funny. We were chatting about that yesterday in the change room. Just like, I suppose it's one of these things as a cross man, you're always kind of like, we always had this attitude of like Armagh wouldn't win without a cross player playing. But there's a few of the boys there, you know, and I suppose the good thing about Armagh now is that, you know, it's probably just the numbers to have. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the rotation, you know, you have boys coming off the bench. And like I said, the game's changed, so it allows for the likes of Rain coming on to have a huge impact, you know, whether he starts the next day and somebody else isn't starting, that each player is just can interchange in and out. And, you know, Armagh are in a good place in terms of, you know, the system they have, that it's, everyone's buying into what, you know, what the plan is.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because they maybe had a disappointing league, Niall. You know, there's a lot of talk that they played defensive football, and although they were competitive in games, ultimately relegated. That changed slightly against Cavan. What did you see that was different? They looked much better.
Yeah, they just seemed like a team who were, and I'm sure James agreed, they just seemed, I'd say, all the talk about the league going bad, it probably fired them up a bit, and you could see it in them from the word go. They were attacking, you know, they were a fired up, and they looked like just a different team to me. Anyway, maybe in Armagh, and you'd know Kieran McGeaney a lot better than I would, like, did you think he'd something up his sleeve that, you know, this was coming?
To be honest, I actually didn't think the league was that bad. I thought it was a decent league campaign, bar, like, the games that Armagh lost, there were only 1 or 2 points in the games, you know, so, like, every team that played that had an opportunity to win the game, I suppose that's the way I would look at it, and bar a couple of bad results, there could have been, you know how tight the league was in the end, you know, they could have been well up the league. Mm-hmm. So I think, obviously, working towards the championship, and you know, it would have been, I suppose, good to stay in Division One, but definitely this year there was a huge focus on the summer. Yeah. And getting ready for that. And yeah, looking at, I suppose, Saturday evening, like, the performance, what I was most impressed about was how calm Armagh were and how they controlled the game and dictated the game gone previous years gone by, where whether it was maybe, you know, gung-ho,
yeah,
and then maybe faded out of it, or the pressure come on, that let they actually control the game and seen the game out, which was what I thought was very impressive.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to strike a balance as such. One player I want to talk about now is Conor Turbitt. From the outside looking in, he looks like he's not really gotten a fair shake, because every time he plays, he seems like he's doing really well. He scored 7 points at the weekend. He was man of the match in the game against Antrim, I think, before it. I wrote about this during the week. Do you think, Niall, that with Rian O'Neill being injured in his absence, it actually allowed him the opportunity to maybe step up, be the main man? Do you know, is there any truth in that?
Well, he showed the last day against Antrim, like, and we've seen it a good few times. I remember against Monaghan last year, this lad came on, and do you know, he kicks points for fun, like, yeah. And he's strong and he's fast and he's built like a main man, and you're kind of wondering, like, why is he not always on the team? And that's how I see it when I'm looking in. I don't know, is he someone you could see, like, should be a main man?
Well, this is it, and I suppose, you know, from when I was last with Armagh, like, the competition was that strong, and Conor was quite young, but you could see that he was, you know, that he was coming through, and obviously with Clannairn, you know, that he had played a big part in them winning the county championship. And again, I suppose it's the way Armagh play at the minute, that it's allowing him, you know, to just that half a yard where he's, you know, they're counter-attacking and he's there, he can win his own ball, he's sharp, and he's very efficient when he, you know, his ratio has been brilliant, you know, in terms of, you know, taking his score. So it's just another addition. I think it's just a different, I suppose, it's another cog for Armagh in terms of a different option, whether it's, do you want to put Rain in full forward? If not, you can take Rain out and you have Conor in. So it's, I suppose it's a headache for other teams, you know what I mean? It's another man, you know, you have to watch.
Sort of, and he is stepping up to the plate. And we've seen that with Galway and Matthew Tierney stepped up, you know, when Comer and Shane Walsh were injured throughout the league campaign. Have you ever been in that situation at all, Jamie? Like, obviously Cross have a plethora of forwards and talent throughout the years, but maybe there was absences through injuries and suspensions. And did you ever feel extra responsibility on those days to get the scores?
I suppose it's one of these things where I probably did in that era of football where, you know, maybe that, I think now teams have more an overall plan where, you know, it's not just isolating one individual to produce something magnificent on the day, you know what I mean? So it's Armagh now, I believe, are set up far better, that if somebody's out, somebody else can step in and replace that, you know, that player. There are probably times where I probably, maybe felt that burden, and you're trying to do things that maybe you shouldn't be doing. You're doing that little bit extra. And then there's times where, you know yourself, you probably should do a little bit more when you're, you know, when you're hot in a game, but you actually, you know, you're probably just playing the percentages or laying it off and playing to the game plan. So I suppose it's just about reading the situation and being present, you know.
Yeah.
It's hard to get used to those changes, like we were talking about club GA at the start, and all the teams now, they've the GPS stats, and they've 15, they're able to defend in numbers, and they're all fitter. Like, is it hard to, like, how did you find kind of adapting to that? And, you know, it's not like you're just of your own man to beat anymore.
Yeah, well, this is it. I think it adds competition. I think it's a good thing in terms of within the team internally. You know, there are competition, whether it's high speed running, whether it's max speed. You're being measured against, you know what I mean, your teammate. And essentially, stats don't lie, you know what I mean? It, when it comes to, you know, what you're being measured on. Now, you're not going to run around like a headless chicken, you know, clocking up the miles. But I just mean from a point of view that you can say, well, if such and such is hitting this target, then this is where I need to get to, you know what I mean? If you're on the cusp of getting into a start in 15, you know that this is where I need to do to, you know, to go up a level. So in terms of that, it really just depends how it's managed and how you look at it. Now, and like I said, if you're fully focused on that and aren't focused on football, like I do see a lot of people in the gym focusing on keeping that strength and condition, but you do see less out on the field practicing.
Yeah.
You know, where it all matters, what's really most important. So I think you have to look at it from that aspect, and it's, you know, overall, like, you have to balance things like that out.
There is probably a thing, though, where there's such an emphasis on the gym, and, you know, there's not that many hours in the day that you can be in the gym and you can be out in the field. And maybe sometimes lads feel, you know, I have to do this gym work, you know, and you're like compelled to do it, and you nearly forget about the bit on the field. Because
I actually think people actually love the gym. So I think they're not doing it because it's hard work, because, like, it's addictive, and people like it and like going and the rewards they get after it. So that's why I'm like, if you're going on the pitch with 100 balls, you don't see that as much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and you might see the likes of Clifford or Rain O'Neill, the likes of them players doing it. But you know what I mean? Like, if it's your cornerback, like, if you look at nowadays, the likes of the top teams like Mayo, Galway, Dublin, all their defenders are all coming up scoring points. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the level you need to get at. So I'd rather encourage getting on the pitch more, as well as, you know.
Is that something you would have focused on doing, like, when you were?
Well, listen, and I think it comes back to the fact that I loved it. I preferred. I loved just going kicking ball. You know what I mean? It was one of these things where it probably comes across you're putting in extra work, but you're doing it because you really enjoy it. And I think that's where it comes across in strength and conditioning. People actually love doing it, so that's where.
Do you love it? Or I think I read an interview with you before. You didn't at one stage, but
yeah, it's not that I don't love it. I suppose it's just I'd rather do it. I mean, it's more the. I'd be quite introverted, so I'd have a social span of talking to people. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
it's perfect for a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't mind doing it. You know, I do like the benefits you get from it in terms of speed and building strength, and there's probably just other ways of exercising that I would prefer, but. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not against that. I think it was probably blew out of proportion.
For lads like me.
Now, we do need to talk about Cavan just a little bit, because they were excellent in the second half. They really brought the game to Armagh. Armagh actually only managed, I think, 4 points in the second half. Would that be a concern for Kieran McGeaney? Was it a case of they had their lead, try to protect it, or should they have tried to push on?
I suppose going to the first half first, I thought Cavan played into Armagh's hands. I thought you could see the difference in, they maybe come in with that attitude of Armagh were Division 1 team. Mm-hmm. And you could see that when Armagh would get the first few scores, Cavan were coming down the field. And instead of, you know, they'd missed a couple of shots early on. And instead of, you know, getting into shape and getting men up the field, they were turning the ball over a lot, so maybe trying shots that were really weren't on, or going in down a blind alley and just turning over the ball. So Armagh were counter-attacking again. And when you're in that situation in a game early on, especially in the heat of championship, you can be gassed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that's where Armagh maybe got Calvin early on. And then just running in the tackles. I thought Armagh going in the tackles were very clever. They were showing Calvin down the line. And, you know, as soon as Calvin got the ball, Armagh were in and got it back straight away. But in terms then of the second half, that did come out and show, I suppose they had to. But I think Armagh, I suppose, always felt they were in control. I don't think they were ever really, bar the goal chance and Rain's block, I don't think they were ever really not in control.
Yeah.
Just took the foot off the gas, I'd say, more than that. And, you know, thinking we have this, like, and we'll just get to the finish.
Well, that's it. And I'm glad you mentioned Rain O'Neill's block, because we've been guilty in this podcast. Like, we're always saying that when he's on the pitch, like, I want to see him closer to goal, keep him closer to goal, and let, you know, play the game through him.
Yeah.
But in moments like that, you can see why it's obviously so tempting to push him up out in the field and get involved with everything, because every aspect of his game is incredible. And that was just such a, that guy was the stuff of heroes.
Yeah, well, this is the thing about Rain, and a lot of people do like him in the goal, in close to the goal. But I don't, because I suppose over time I've realised that I was close to goal when I was, you know, with a different era, I suppose, again, and you want to be involved in the game and you're told to sit in and the game's going by 20 minutes and you haven't got involved in the game. Now, I think I prefer Rain out the field and letting him go up and down, because he's on the ball and he can deliver a pass in, and if he wants to go in full forward, you know, if he's tired, he needs 5 minutes, he can go in and send someone out. And then I suppose I always feel safe, you know, Rain in a defensive position, because he's so big, so good in the air, and he reads the game really well. And like on Saturday evening, he saw, you know, he kind of positioned himself. I kind of think he knew your man was going to shoot for goal.
Yeah.
So he kind of leaned, he stood back and waited for him to have the shot, and then just kind of fell into it. Like, so, I think I'd prefer to see him, you know, out around the middle of the field.
So would you start him with centre half forward and have like a Roman kind of role, or?
Yeah, centre half forward, and if he wants to go in full forward, he can swap, but he can go back, because he's got a great engine and he can run all day, and he plays that long the diagonal ball that Armagh can play on the counter attack. And if you've Conor Turbitt up front, who's fast, and Rain can play that, you know, 50, 60 yard kick pass, and it's on, you know what I mean? So.
Okay, the problem is like, you want two Rain O'Neills. You want one to kick it in and you want one to catch it. Like,
well,
you can't
the thing
be spoiled.
Is, like, Armagh are so versatile now. Like, you've Andy Murnin, you know, who can play full forward, who's an unbelievable ball winner. You've Stephen Campbell now, who can run all day as well. So, it is one of these things where Armagh have that many, you know, players that are, you know, operating at that level now, that it's, they can interchange in and out.
Well, the fact they have Conor Turbitt now, like, gives them that option. They can, you know, you have him inside and you can leave Rain O'Neill, he can hit the ball into him. So when he was coming up in Crossmaglen, was he a lad you seen and you're like, you know, even from a young age?
Well, when, it's funny, like, when 2000 and around 2010, 11, those All-Ireland winning teams were Cross, Garrett was obviously the manager, so Rain and Oisin O'Neill would have always been at training, you know, they're young fellas, but they're always kicking and, you know, just observing and being there. So you always knew this is the next generation. You see them coming through, and they have younger brothers too coming on as well, so they'll be coming out in the next couple of years too. But you kind of always knew that, they were going to be, you know, going to be stars for Cross and for Armagh in the future.
Did he always have that kind of hard edge about him? Like, he's a great lad to get stuck into a game. Sometimes he goes overboard.
He got
sometimes
his customary yellow card as soon as he came on.
Of course,
as well. You know, like, he loves to get,
I think he's
physical.
Clever like that, though. He knows what to get away with. But he also knows when to leave his mark. I'm sure he gets enough hits too, so he knows, well, if you're going to give it, I'm going to give it back, kind of thing. And he does play on the edge, which is what I like anyway. It's modern day football, so. You know, I like that side of his game. I think I wouldn't take that out of his game.
Was it Darren O'Sullivan compared him to Wayne Rooney? And I thought it reminded me a bit of him. Do you know the way he just, he's silky and skillful, but he's, you know, he's well able to stand up for himself.
There's a rawness.
Just raw, yeah.
Yeah, and you want to keep that, then nearly that street footballer mentality kind of thing. I was wondering too, because, like, he comes across to you as obviously he gets stuck in and never hang on the pitch, but he's maybe rather like introverted himself and conservative, or that's just how he seems, maybe because he doesn't want to do too many media interviews. He gets enough, he's tortured enough, I'm sure, yeah, in Armagh.
But the thing about Rian is that he's a lovely lad, so he'll, you know, I suppose that's just the way, his way of going on. He's nice, he does his own thing, you know. Yeah, and he brings it, I suppose, a different energy when it comes to the pitch. He knows his football, he knows the magnitude of what, when the ball's thrown up, that you're on. When you're on, you're on, and then when it's off, he's his own person. He is quiet, but you know, he has his mates and he has his teammates and stuff, so he's just another one of the lads, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously another big game that happened at the weekend was Roscommon and Galway. Without using the cliches, it was a game of two halves. Roscommon were very poor in the first half. I think they only kicked 3 points. I mean, was it a case of they gave everything for Mayo and had nothing left for Galway? Or
that's what it looked like, yeah, because you see the first half, did they? I don't think they even scored from play in the first half, do you know? And like I knew something was going to come, how good they were against Mayo, and you know, they've been really good under Davy Burke, and you knew something was going to come, and it came in that 5 minute spell where they went from 8-3 down to 1-6 to 8 points up, and like it was like a wave. Galway couldn't win a kick out, they had no way out against Roscommon, and there could have been another goal in that 5 minutes when Daly fisted it just wide after Enda Smith run it into him. So I think they just, after that wave, they kind of just ran out of gas, and it was disappointing because like they ended up being beaten by 7 points, like, you know. Yeah. And but they seemed flat, I thought, at the start of the game, and whether it was the high of beating Mayo, but you know, they couldn't get Enda Smith into it. John Maher on his championship debut, he had him well kind of marshalled, and Enda Smith's such a key player for Roscommon, and Dermot Murphy didn't get into it after being, you know, unreal the last day. So just disappointing. I was disappointed with them now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, like, have you ever been in that situation, Jamie? Like, have you ever had so much time to prepare for one game? It's been so hyped and you muster up everything for it as a team. You do it and then you fall short at the next hurdle because you've nearly left everything there.
I suppose it happens. Like, if you look at the league campaign, like, Roscommon were excellent.
Yeah.
You know, and I suppose that was one of the games that everyone had kind of, I suppose, bookmarked to see what's going to happen here. And I don't think anybody really knew who was going to come out on top. And like I said, like that league campaign, anybody could have won. And, you know, whoever met in Division One, it was up in the air. So, look, you do have days like that where you come out and you're a bit flat. And it could have been, you know, that Mayo game. But I did think Galway were good and they got their matchups right. And yeah, they just wanted it more on the day. Like I think both teams are very, very impressive. I watched Roscommon and Armagh during the league and how they moved the ball through their hands, you know, particularly in attacking areas, you know, their fitness and you know, even with Jamie Murdoch and Kieran Murdoch as well, like just they had their shooting boots on all of the league campaign. So you have days like that, and I think they will be back. You know, they're a top six team at the minute, you know. Yeah. So
no, for sure. I think they'll have a say, you know, in this All Ireland qualifier series. Damian Comer was really the difference, I think you have to say. He kicked 3 points in the first half, and then when Roscommon were on that rise, when Galway really needed a player to step up, he stepped up and got 1-1, and it was his goal that kind of punctured, you know, their momentum. He's a throwback full forward. Like, I don't want to like disservice him in any way, you know, but he is the bear in the square still. Like, he's obviously got all the modern skills, he's fit, he's fast, he tackles, he tracks back, but when he is on the edge of the square, because he's so strong and he reads the game so well and he can kick a point and a goal from either foot, like, is he the reason why a team should still have a focal point, you know, instead of just playing systematically all the time?
First of all, I thought he was excellent in terms of his link play, you know, his going through the hands and his tackling back as well. But when he was in the square, the thing about Comer, I was in Croke Park last year for Armagh and Galway, and you always have that fear because he doesn't drop it. You know, he always has his body in front and he's getting the ball. You always have that, he's actually that good at it.
Yeah.
You know, I think Tommy Walsh was very similar when he was with Kerry, that when the ball is going in, you know that Tommy Walsh is catching it. whether it's one hand or two hand, but he's getting it. So I think with Comer, like, it's just one of these things. I think Galway, I always kind of had a soft spot for Galway from, you know, the team in the 90s and the quality of player they always produced. And that this team is reminding me of, you know, obviously with Joyce,
yeah,
you know, being manager, it's reminding me of that team. Yeah, and I think they're, at the minute, they're the number one team in the country. Just the quality of player. Like, I think Kelly's he's the best fullback in the country. You know, Walsh, look, and they have McDade and Finnerty coming off the bench as well. You know, similar to Armagh, they have options. And yeah, I just think that yesterday Galway really wanted that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think in the end, you know, that, you know, a Connacht title, it'll set them up, you know, pushing on from last year. That's what they want.
Well, you could see it in Park Joyce after the game. The kids were on hugging him, mm-hmm. and he was hugging, it was John Concannon, the selector. And, you know, this was a big thing. Yeah. And just on Comer, like, I sometimes have a tendency of just saying, you know, this adds the bear in the square and he'll win the ball. And, you know, he's so strong and he'll throw you out of his way. But, like, he doesn't have a bad foot.
No.
He's so skillful. He never, as you said, Jamie, he never, ever drops the ball. Like, and he just has every bit of skill. He's quick to move, quick with the solo, quick with everything. Like, and yeah. I think sometimes he's a little bit underestimated just because he's like,
with Shane Walsh as this, well. You know,
yeah,
they're always being compared. When one has a good game, the other one
it
maybe
is,
has to
yeah.
do a more workman role.
And he probably just doesn't get the sure, he didn't even get man the match yesterday.
I know. I was going to bring that up, Per Keegan. I think he's getting a lot of abuse, but I mean, did you see that? He gave it to Murta instead. Sean Kavanagh.
Must have had it decided it earlier or something.
Well, that's what he said.
Yeah, he tweeted an apology, but I'm pretty sure he logged on to Twitter and seen all of the abuse. But were you shocked by that when you seen it? Like, was Comer the obvious man of the match?
Listen, it's one of these things when you always expect just the yeah. winning team to get man of the match. But yeah, I suppose, look, it's, you know, Kieran Murta is a good game as well, you know, if you look yeah. at it from that perspective. But I think, I thought Comer was... You suppose probably would have been my man of the match yesterday.
Yeah, well, in Leinster, we had a really good game between Westmeath and Louth. Like, this was the comeback off the weekend. So Louth were, I think, 8 points down at halftime. But under Mickey Hart, they showed the real resilience. He admitted at halftime that, you know, they're just going out there to play for honour nearly. But they managed to pull it back. Sam Mulroy was brilliant. He's back from injury, so he showed great leadership, converted a penalty. But, like, is this second half syndrome a theme of this championship, or is it always there? Because that's Roscommon, that's Cavan, it's Louth, Monaghan last week against Tyrone. Like, what's being said, Jamie, at halftime? Is it the rousing speech? Is it just the break and play? What's the difference?
I suppose it's one of these things as well where I think it's a good thing that if you're 4 or 5 points up, like, when it was really defensive, you know, a couple of years ago, the game was nearly over. You would have said it's hard to see a team get back into it. But when you see, like, there's, you know, 5, 6, 7 points in a game now, you still have a chance, which is good. And I think it's probably because of there's more goals, mm-hmm. I think, that are happening. I don't think there's anything really, you know, other than underperforming. You know, like, it's performing your potential. Like with Loud yesterday, Sam Mulroy missed a couple of goal chances in mm-hmm. the first half, so he was still getting them. I suppose it was just a case of converting them. And when he converted the 2 goal chances, he got one, and they're back in the game, you know. And look how the swing, it turned so quickly that, you know, Loud were 3 points up then.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a terrible result, I think, for me. But I think you can see the influence of Mickey Hart.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, have you ever been in that situation where you've gone in at half-time, completely flat, looking like you're out of it, and then, so, you know, and then it just changed and you pulled it off?
It's happened loads of times where you think, how are we going to get back into it? And you just the momentum changes in a game. Like, there are obviously the quarters within the game, and there are times where you're thinking this is going to be tight, but it happens, you know. It just takes one or two players to step up, and if you get 2 or 3 points on the trot, you're well in contention.
Sure. So listen to Mickey Hart, his interview after the game, and he was nearly like saying, do you know, Westmeath got 7 points up, and it was nearly a bad thing for us because they think they have the game won and we're going out, as he said, they're going out for honour in the second half. And, you know, like, the pressure, even though they're, you know, they're disappointed, the pressure's nearly off for Loud then.
Yeah.
And they can just...
Shackles,
like,
off.
And I suppose they would be. I suppose that was the one surprise about it, was that they'd be kind of a counter-attacking team so that they can find it hard to get back into it. But mm-hmm. they got the momentum, and I suppose, like, Roscommon, they lost the momentum, but when you do get the momentum, it can be hard enough to lose it. Like, and Westmeath just found it hard to get it back because they were on fire in the first half. Mm-hmm. Like, Rowan Wallace bombing up the field, setting up O'Toole for the goal. And yeah, that seemed like
O'Toole's a serious player, really.
The two of them, and you thought that was, do you think that's the end of it? You know, because Loud were kind of clawing their way back, and then the goal, and it's 7 points. And
but in those kind of tight games, you know, it's that the timing of it is more important than, you know, than anything, because if you're getting that run at that stage of the game, you know, it's you're going into the, you know, the last 10-15 minutes of the game, you know, your tail's up, so you know what I mean. It's
Like when you're on top in the first half, it's not going to last the whole game.
Exactly, you know? And you still have to come again, and you probably could see it with even going back to the Armagh and Cavan. They were on top, but they kind of they were that much in front.
Yeah,
you know, they kind of could manage it, and I suppose Westmeath did probably could have managed it better, and didn't. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's the smarts as well of the game and being able to manage it better.
You need to make hay when you're on top, don't you? Like Armagh did, and to be as far ahead that you nearly can, you've enough of a cushion.
Exactly, and I think, I suppose looking at Dublin, they made sure that there's no way back.
There's no way back there, God. Obviously, there's the Mickey Hart effect as well. I mean, we all know he's done a brilliant job, what they've done in the league, but championships where it matters, and you know, now they've got that progression in the championship. Jim, you came across a lot of Tyrone teams managed by Mickey Hart, I'm sure, throughout the years. How would you describe a Mickey Hart team?
I think the thing about Mickey Hart that he's so clever at matchups. He has that, like the fact that he's had time with Loud going into the Loud camp, and he's had time, so there's no pressure. So all of the lads have seemed to have bought into it. And if you look at over the period of time he's there, how they've gradually gone up. Like they're now, they'll be playing Armagh in Division 2 next year. So like Armagh are, you know, all Ireland contenders, and Loud are in Division 2. Like so it's a massive jump for Loud, and how he has this ability, you know, I suppose from winning the All-Irelands early on, that he just has the system. Kind of reminds me of Alex Ferguson in a way, where he knows how to get the best out of players. He seems to utilise his backroom staff really well. Where I can't imagine him being as hands-on in training, mm-hmm. but just observing, and then, you know, making tweaks to, you know, to with his coaches and stuff like that. So, but very, very shrewd, great understanding of the game, and yeah, he utilizes, you know, every, you know, aspect of his team.
Yeah, well, he's definitely utilizing everything in Louth at the minute because they're flying. Talking about an Ulster man, we'll go back to Ulster. Downvie, Donegal, Niall, the Conor Laverty revolution has begun. You see much of it?
Definitely. Sure, Donegal, they were kind of going into it, and you know, there was just not good in Donegal at the minute. And you know, you'd expect Donegal, I know they're down a few, you nearly think the quality of players that, and the experience they've had in Ulster the last few years, that they might shade it, but Down are probably the coming team and Donegal are falling, and that was the way it was in the game. Donegal started well and got the ideal start, I suppose. Jason McGee with the goal, and
I don't think anyone saw that, like an early goal from Donegal, and because everyone was predicting a really cagey game, and don't get me wrong, it was, but you know, I think that could have really took the wind out of Down seals, but they were confident in themselves.
Yeah, it's definitely the Conor Laverty effect, in terms of he's brought this, I suppose, confidence, you know, and he's got the Kilcoo boys back as well. Like with Conor, he likes his players, you know, you look at Kilcoo, they're really fit. I can imagine all the players being really, really fit. Everton's moved at speed. I think on the Sunday game it showed the point that it was down to the free kick and it was hidden straight away. Like that's the way Conor Laverty plays. You know, he wants Everton moved at speed, and I suppose he has boys running from deep too, you know, and they're just driving forward at pace, which is very hard to stop. If you have, you know, runners coming at twos and threes, it's very difficult to stop. You know, with that said, from Donegal's perspective, things don't look good. It's definitely gonna be, it's one of these things, and I suppose I experienced it with Armagh in the past too, where there's gonna be like a turnover of a lot of players, you know, to try and get it right. So I think it's important for them to really, you know, I suppose see how well they can do in the summer and push on. but then really regroup and take a step back and look to see and put a strategy in place to, you know, to grow again. Because once Michael Murphy left, you know, it's left a huge hole, I suppose, in terms of leadership. And there's they've lost a number of key players as well, and just the changing of the guard. It's difficult to get back on the horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like, is it lazy to say that they look like a team completely bereft of confidence?
I think so too. I've seen there's certain things that were said that were buying into things that the media is saying, but that's sport, you know. You got to take that. Yeah, like when you're not winning, you're gonna be lacking confidence. You know, it's one of these things. Like over the last decade, they've been one of the top teams in Ulster, mm-hmm. you know, and in the country. So to maintain that's very difficult. And players come and go. It's just a case of, you know, how do you get back to that stage quick and don't let it. It doesn't necessarily mean Donegal's time's over.
Yeah,
you know, you can still keep. You know, you're only in Division Two. You're not miles off.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of, you know, putting things in place that, you know, to still being able to compete, rather than slowly going down the ladder. Like, it's better to resolve things now than.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to have the players, I suppose. Like, we've seen that for you know, the last few years, Donegal, they have some class players. It's just this year with, you know, Paddy Carr leaving, then there was the bit about the academy and the big fallout from that, and just Everton was on a bit of a downer. And I'd say,
but things like that have a huge impact.
Yeah.
If you don't have things right from the top down, just filters through the team. Like, if the players don't have a strategy and, you know, I suppose a plan to follow, like, you can of course have, you know, leaders, and it can be player led, but the players need to know exactly what they're doing going on to the pitch, you know. And it's one of these things where it just seemed, you know, it's disjointed from the top down.
When it rains, it pours, because they have been unlucky with some serious injuries. Paddy McBrady's out, Ryan McHugh's out. You know, like, there's two other massive leaders, and that just happened to happen when Michael Murphy retired. So now you're missing three, like, huge names. You know,
they nearly had an excuse, didn't they? Like, it was like, they're nearly beaten before they went out, is what I could see that. And I could see that before the game. I didn't put money on down or anything, but I should have, because I fancied it. Like,
and it's one of these things where Donegal, the players can regroup now and they'll probably say, look, let's give it Everton for the rest of the summer. And I've been there, but you still don't have the plan in place. Like, you can go out and you think you're going to give it all and you're going to put Everton in the lane, but the other team is just a better strategy and a better plan, and they just outplay you because things just aren't right.
Well, I'm going to ask you both this question. I'll go with you first, Niall. They're not out of the championship. There's still something there for them to play for. Do you think they can salvage anything for this season?
No. I think that Jamie kind of hammered it home there. When you don't have that plan, I know they have a good, what, 4 or 5 weeks now before that starts, but I just think it's not going to happen. They're too far behind, and especially with the lads missing, the way it's gone, I think this year Donegal write it off, for me anyway.
And you echo that, or?
Yeah, I suppose it's one of these things where I would agree that it's really hard to see them salvaging it from the year, but again, they need to look at what can we do moving forward and really try and fix that sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously another big game on another team that's really low in confidence is Meath. They lost to Offaly. This is another case of, you know, one team's on the up and the other seems to be on the down. But in any situation, Niall, Meath not competing for the All-Ireland, because now they're in the Tailteann Cup, I mean, you know, it's not something you'd expect.
Yeah, well, they got the perfect start to the league when they beat Cork, and, you know, they won the next day out as well. And, you know, they were banging in the goals, and you were kind of, but just since then, it's been a terrible finish to the league and a terrible start here to the championship. It's kind of carried in, and, you know, the whole thing seems to be in disarray. Like, mm-hmm. Joe Sheridan had a tweet up. He was saying that he's never seen a team as disorganised, and nobody was fighting. The body language was terrible. People don't seem to know where they're playing. There was lads coming in who hadn't played in their last league games and hadn't played in league games, and lads like that, they're not playing now, and there's other lads getting dropped off the panel, and there's just an awful lot of talk coming out of me that isn't good for a team. And I suppose it was similar to Donegal coming in against Down. You know, that there was a downer on the camp, and you could just see it coming. And, you know, Offaly have had a decent league campaign, and you could see the pictures after the game, like they were rebels with a cause in that match. Like, do you know, they were fighting for Liam Kearns, the manager who passed away earlier in the year. And, do you know, it was in O'Connor Park and Offaly just, like, sure, it was 1-8 to 2 points at half time. It was like that. Like, Mead made the run, like, as we'd said with the last game, but it's the damage is done.
There was one of those teams, Mead, where I suppose if, you know, an underdog can get a lead on them, they can smell blood, and it seemed like Offaly smelled blood.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, they knew that they were there for the taking. And yeah, I think Colin O'Rourke's finding the management side of things more difficult than he probably thought. Yeah, it's one of these things, and when you hear things that there's players in and out of a camp, and players are getting playing when they probably don't deserve to be playing, it's not a good sign. Similar boat to Donegal, I think, as well, in terms of restructuring and from the top down, what's going on.
Like, I'd say Offaly coming into that, you know, they wouldn't have been scared of Mead, because Mead's
It seems like they thought that they could have won.
Do you
know?
Said they smelt blood, for sure.
And Mead haven't been, you know, in the last few years, like, they haven't been doing well. Like, you know, they've been doing okay, but they're not, like, we're probably saying Mead should be in the All-Ireland. It's a shock they're in the Tadhg Cup, but that's the level that they've been at.
Yeah, well, that's what Sean Kavanagh said in the Sunday game. He said that they've got what they deserve, and he made no bones about, you know, poking fun at Colm O'Rourke, and Lee Keegan did as well. I thought it'll be a bit awkward if he does come back to RTE. But, like, Colm O'Rourke, week in, week out, was slating teams for being really defensive. Like, that was just his go-to, you know, and every time there was a defensive game, they would go to O'Rourke, nearly setting him up to say, you know, what do you think of this? And it's per football and whatever else. So he's almost dying by the sword in that he has to play this particular brand of football. And, like, you know, let's be really honest about it, like, his defence needs a lot of work, you know, so is he stopped himself almost?
Yeah, it's this is the thing. It just in the modern day football, you have to go to times and you have to evolve. I think with Cross as well, we were, you know, victims of it too, thinking that we could play man for man, kicking ball, you know, with the new systems. It just doesn't work. Percentage wise, you turn over too much ball, and possession's key now. So if you're not willing to adapt, essentially, you're going to be left behind, I think.
Yeah. The other thing about Colm O'Rourke, I think, is that it's one thing to say, you know, we can't play this defensive football and we can go man to man and we're going to tackle Dublin and Leinster and everything. But Meath weren't in a great place anyway. Do you know, are we being too harsh on him by saying, you know, he's the reason for their downfall? They've kind of been falling off this cliff now for the last couple of seasons. Has he just taken over a really bad Meath setup? And actually, it's too soon to judge him.
I think so, yeah. Like, I think, you know, they haven't, like, under Andy McEntee, they were probably having the odd good game, but they weren't, like, you know, they were never this team you're expecting them to go out and, you know, challenge Dublin. It was the same kind of a thing. And, you know, I say, maybe Colm expected, you know, that the players might be at a higher level and, you know, they might be able to play this, but I suppose when you have the mix of that and, you know, they're obviously getting, they're too open and, you know, they're getting destroyed that way. So,
the quality hasn't been there in Mead for quite some time.
Yeah.
But with that said, like with the modern game, if you can get your system and your shape the right way, look at the likes of Loud, look at Offaly, you know, like teams like that, are buying into it. To how buying into the strategy and how, you know, the management want the players to play, and it just seems that people are doing their own thing, or maybe the players don't really have the right guidance and know what way they're playing. You know,
just on that, if you look at Down and Conor Laverty, he's the manager of the senior team and he's the manager of the under-20s team. The under-20s are in an Ulster final on Wednesday, so you know he's trying to make like a systemic change. Mickey Hart's, I think, is the same with Louth. You know, is that the way to go forward? Should you have, like, one man at the helm with a plan and then everyone buys in to roll that plan out, all the other coaches and things?
I think that could work. Like, I think that's been happening. It's just probably the same manager. Like Tyrone obviously have their, you know, their blueprint that they had probably followed from the $1, and they had that blueprint from underage up, and it's worked very successfully for them. I think Donegal as well, when Jim McGuinness, things changed underage for them as well. But yeah, I definitely think so. And you can see, you know, down kind of flourishing now with the system that everyone's buying in. From the top down, they said, right, this is the plan, this is the strategy, this is how we're going to play. And it's, you know, being implemented across the board and, you know, for the better, because it's better having, you know, one plan in place than having too many voices that, you know, players are being pulled in different directions. They don't know what they're doing.
You mentioned there, Niall, challenge in Dublin, or the lack of challenge for Dublin. They steamrolled Laois. I don't think there's any point really talking about the game itself, but I just want to know, do you think, like, have we learned anything about that, them in that game? Is that impressive for you? Do you know, if you were a team outside of Leinster, are you worried about that Dublin team because of that performance, or does it mean nothing? Really?
I think you would be. Like, yeah. Do you know, the bookies are rarely wrong, and they had the handicap at 15 points and Dublin beat them by 27. And, do you know, no matter who you're playing, do you know, like, you're not, you have to be playing well if you want to beat someone by 27 points, like, which is what they did. And, do you know,
they racked up 30, like.
Yeah, and they've been, what was it, 4-30. And, yeah. Do you know, they've been, they did well against Derry. Do you know, they showed signs of being back. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, you know, they're not the team that they were, but they're showing signs, I think, anyway, of a team that's, you know, they're coming into it now. And maybe, I don't know, you could never say Dublin are under the radar, but I think they're, you know, they're moving along nicely. They've Paul Mannion, Conor Callaghan's back, not injured. And
he hit 1-7.
Do you know, 1-7.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And I think a criticism of Dublin in recent years is that they've controlled games too much. They've been very boring and they actually don't win by huge margins anymore. But they really went out to slaughter this team. Like,
I think it's massive. Like, 4-30 in a game at a canter. It's a huge statement. Like, bear in mind, these boys have pedigree. These boys have 4 or 5 All-Ireland medals. You know, it's not a team in transition. They're all so young still. And you can see that that was a statement in terms of, we're not letting up. People, and I think the media as well, have maybe forgotten about Dublin a little bit. I think even the coverage that they got on Sunday game.
Yeah.
Like, them boys are coming as well. There's no way they're going to...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't rule them out of the All-Ireland. Like, it's one of these things where I think they're chomping at the bit, the Dubs.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, the All-Ireland champions played at the weekend. We haven't even talked about them yet. It was in a similar situation, sort of steamrolled your county, Niall. Again, is there much to learn from that? They played a really, really strong team. They're not messing about. There's no case of it's just Munster. They're really going for it.
Yeah, like, I'd say as a Tipperary fan, you'd have seen that coming, because they just have had a very disjointed year and losing players, and Michael Quinlivan isn't there. He's kind of he's been the key man for many years, Tipperary. You just want to see him there. And they had a few injuries. Stephen O'Brien was back this time. But you're just seeing it coming, and things haven't been going well with Tip. So, seeing it coming a small bit. I'm getting the vibe off Jamie when he said Galway earlier on. Are you fancying a Dublin Galway, maybe All-Ireland, or who do you...
Well, just on the Kerry and Tip, the thing about Kerry, like, I suppose it's, you know, the way they play is they'd probably be fancied for the All-Ireland, you know. They had an okay league, but they seem to be saving themselves for the championship, and they're gonna be hot, you know, come the right time. Now, the only issue with Kerry, I suppose, is the only exception, because he's that good. If you take Clifford out of the team, they're probably the only team really that would really weaken Kerry, you know, and like putting Kerry up against anyone, you'd fancy them. But if you take Clifford out, or Sean O'Shea for that matter, then I think it really weakens Kerry. So that's why I would say maybe Galway, Dublin at the minute are the top two for me.
Well, one other game was Kildare and Wicklow. Kildare got the win, but Wicklow did very well to actually, you know, they made it a competitive game. It was only scored sort of late on. They made the scoreline a lot more favourable to Kildare. But after the league campaign they had, they'll just be, you know, Glen Ryan will be delighted to get another win and really focus on Leinster and moving forward. Now, that's all we have time for in terms of reviewing the weekend, but we're not going to let Jimmy away with it just yet. We're going to do a quick fire round. Niall here is going to put you through the ringer a little, Jimmy. Is that all right?
Go for it.
Just before we do this, I might just ask you about, because I know you played for New York, and I don't know, were you watching that one at the weekend?
Just seeing the highlights on the...
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was delighted. I suppose having played out there before, like, we were so close. It's one of them games where I actually took it really bad, because we were we were in the driving seat going into the last 5 minutes. You know, we had the game essentially won. And yeah, I suppose that just the lack of match practice and the cuteness let us down on the day. But you could see that it was building, and they knew that this time around that this was an opportunity. And, you know, fair play to them. It's massive for New York. If you know, you've been out there, that you see what it means to people out there. And obviously Sligo is a step too far, but it's a stepping stone. You know, they're getting more games, which is essentially what they need. You know, to see American born kids, you know, playing is amazing too. Like how they're learning the game and picking it up and being able to play, you know, at the top level, it's quite cool.
Well, what was that experience like, and how? You know, I don't want to I think we all assume that it's far off, you know, county level, but I suppose Armagh with yourself. I mean, but what was the difference like in terms of training and quality, or was it really up there?
Well, when I said I was going to be on board, I suppose I had assessed what have we got? Do you know what, like in terms of players, in terms of quality, who are we getting in? Like, are we going to be able to compete?
Mm-hmm.
And when I seen we had enough, it was a case of ramping up the training in terms of when you train, you're training hard. And yeah, you just commit. Everyone has to commit and buy into it. Like we played Cara Finn, they had just won the All-Ireland. And I think we beat them 10, 11 points, you know, it was our only kind of warm-up game too, the Leitrim game. And yeah, like I suppose it's just the smarts and getting used to championship games that was all that was missing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, quality. But the more players that are going out there, like I think a lot of the boys were able to come home as well, which was, you know, that game against Sligo will stand to them.
Yeah,
it's just it fizzled out because I think a lot of them were happy with maybe.
Yeah,
and you can't blame them. Like, no. Sure, isn't that the thing? Like, do you know, Leitrim and Sligo, they have a full league campaign played, and New York are going into that. And like as you said, you've played whatever one challenge game. Like, it's some achievement that they did beat New York, and I'm sure you've seen it, Jamie, when you're over there. Like the effort some lads were putting in. Like Shane Carty was coming up from Boston, and other lads coming up from, do you know, down further down New York, and it's a long way up, and you know, there's probably in the winter months, and it's not simple. Like,
well, this is it, and the likes of them boys will reap the rewards now being based in the States. You know, it's like it's the first time in history it's been done. So, you know, like in terms of the development of the game out there, it's massive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was good stalling, but you almost got away with it. Now, still going to ask you the quick fire round.
Right, let's go. Without further ado, favourite sport, Jamie, to watch outside of the GA?
Football.
Who do you support?
Liverpool.
Come on, that's right. It's okay, that'll stay in.
I'm outnumbered here. Favourite Cross McGlen footballer growing up?
Oisín McConville.
Okay. I can kind of see a bit of yourself in him, maybe. Do you know, the silky, skillful lad, and
Don't be telling him that.
Favourite holiday destination?
You got him now.
There's so many of them.
Yeah. I definitely think Mallorca. There are places in Mallorca that I suppose people don't know that I would really like. There's a place called Valdemossa in Mallorca. That I like.
Okay, good spot.
Glad.
Good party kind of a spot, or
no,
just
no,
calm
no.
kind
it's
of.
It's calm, yeah.
Okay, lay back.
Yeah.
Which is better, crack a soccer dressing room or a GA dressing room?
GA.
Why is that?
I think the soccer's more relaxed. You know, the whole environment's more relaxed. There's different cultures and different people. I think with the Gaelic, it just seems like the people you grow up with, it's the lads. You know, can be more intense, the GAA dressing room, but when, you know, after a victory, there's nowhere else you'd rather be.
A bit more kind of slagging, you maybe know a lad's better in the GAA.
Yeah, there's a lot more of that in the GAA, yeah. Soccer's, there's a bit more respect in soccer. Yeah.
Okay, which would be a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Haaland or Mbappe?
Mbappe.
Okay, that was quick.
Yeah, it was quick.
You're a fan of him?
Yeah, I think he's more to his game. Just it's a skill with the pace he can play, out wide he can play, down the middle. World Cup winner. Look at what age he's unbelievable.
23, 24, yeah, unbelievable. Best dressed man in the GA.
You can say yourself, it's okay.
Yeah.
You're going with that?
Yeah, you still have to say it. Yeah.
And lastly, will you play for Armagh again?
Who knows? I'm not sure if it'll be this year. It's one of these things. If the doors open at some stage and I'm still knocking about putting in the work, maybe down the line, who knows?
But you're still banging them in for Cross McGlen, so what more can you do?
Yeah, it's Cross's game now, so just focus on them and focus on getting the county back this year.
Well, there we go, not officially retired. There's your exclusive for the GAR. Thank you so much, Jimmy, for coming on to the show. We really appreciate it. Hopefully get you back on again, and we'll be back with an exclusive interview with David Clifford. Don't go away.
David, so I was driving the car this morning, I heard you on the radio at 9 o'clock, so a very busy day. That was Clareburn Live, in the GAR in one day, so you've made it.
Yeah, hectic day, right? I suppose this is kind of the one thing I've kind of done this campaign with Super Value for the past probably 3 years or so. So it's kind of the one day I've penciled in that it's fairly hectic, but I get all my media stuff done in the one day. So it's good.
Talk to all those guys and get it over it.
That's it.
Yeah, I was watching, I was planning on starting by asking about being surrounded by a stampede of youngsters, but they managed to, they kept them in Fitzgerald Stadium at the weekend. Yeah, it saved you 30 minutes.
I suppose it was great to see, especially at the end of the campaign, I suppose it was great to see the support from the younger kids and stuff like that. But I suppose, look, you're well aware of the fact that you can't you can't spend all your time doing it, or you probably get worn out. So it is very enjoyable, to be fair.
What do you make of it all? It's a bit mad at times, like a game is only 5 or 10 seconds over and you've nearly 100 people surrounding you. What do you make of it?
Yeah, look, I suppose it's hard because you can't give the time that you'd like to maybe to everyone. So you're just trying to, I suppose, be as nice as possible to the kids. And then you hear the stories from them, like of maybe where you might have met them before in the past, or where they might have travelled for the games and stuff like that. So I know it's great, to be fair.
You probably get all sorts of requests looking for jerseys and gloves, and I can imagine
it's right, there is
parents probably coming up to you as well, or is it usually kids? Or?
Yeah, mainly the kids, but you'd have a few parents in there too, to be fair, yeah.
Mad enough. So I suppose then moving on, when you leave the pitch then, I was listening to Bubbles O'Dwyer in the podcast recently, said they get letters in the home. Was that something that you would have...
I do. Yeah, again, yeah, you do. Of course you do. And again, like, it's 99.9% of the stuff is all very positive. Like, so it's great. Again, you're hearing stories maybe of people that might be sick or might have been sick or something like that, and might have been watching the games, or maybe seeing Kerry being successful and stuff like that might have helped them along. So it's great to see stuff like that. So I suppose myself and my father, we try and write back to as many of them as we possible, as we possibly can, yeah. But no, yeah, I suppose it's probably changed now from, like, I don't think there's as many people writing letters anymore. So a lot of it tends to be like school projects and stuff like that where they're writing, yeah, so.
They send you in a school project and that's the year term.
Yeah, maybe I primary school, you know, and you used to have to learn how to write a letter and stuff like that, so you'd be the person they choose, maybe.
Okay, so the postman he's a regular caller.
He's busy, right, yeah.
And is it dad that he'd take care of a lot of the fan mail, is it?
Yeah, he does, to be fair, yeah.
He doesn't mind it, sure, he's mad into football
exactly,
anyway. And then going on, like, what's it like, even, you know, it's mad, the whole kind of celebrity kind of status around you, like, is it mad even walking around Killarney? Would you ever have a stage where there'd be people surrounding you, do you know, if you're going into the shop, or do you leave that to someone else to go in?
Yeah, no, like, it's probably actually not, it's probably worse when you're outside of Kerry, because, you know, the people in Kerry are used to seeing people who are successful in sport, and, you know, I think maybe, like, a lot of time in Killarney, there's plenty of other people around the town that have done a lot more than me in football, so people in Killarney are generally respectful. And again, as I said, it's always well-wishers. You're never going to get anyone saying anything negative really towards you, so it's nice, you know.
Not too bad. Yeah. So your first kind of break in a long time really there with the two league games at the start of the year, had you itchy feet watching, or were you able to, you know, press a little off switch?
Yeah, of course, you're well aware, like, that you have to take the time to relax, but I suppose it's hard when the season has started with the lads that you're not out there with them, because I suppose you're very conscious, like, that you want to kind of be back there and try and get back up to the level again and help them out. So I suppose it's a break, like, yeah, but it's always harder to take your break when the season has started because of that, because there's games actually going on, you know.
Okay, and what do you like? What do you spend when you get a bit of free time? Are you a man for the Netflix or the what is your?
Yeah, a bit of everything. A bit of Netflix. I play a bit of golf. And I just watch any sport really. Yeah, so that's kind of the main things that I do. And I go, I get a break from football, but I go to watch a lot of club games anyway and stuff in Kerry. So I suppose it's giving you a break from your own game. But I never really feel suffocated by football either. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
A lot of people kind of spend their time scrolling through TikTok. You're not a man for the social media. Like, was that a decision you made early on? Where did that come from?
Yeah, it's when I was younger, I suppose. I just never really bothered with it. There wasn't any reason for it. And then I suppose it had gone so far that I was kind of sure I was happy enough not being on it. I didn't feel like I was missing out on anything. I'm not sure. Sure, it's hard to know really why I'm not on it, but... I'm happy enough for my decision so far.
You don't need to see all the rubbish lads like me be posting on it.
So.
Might give you a bit of a break. But from there then, like moving on from that Armagh game, and I just noticed it in that game, you don't seem to mind, like obviously inside forwards get a lot of attention. And has seen a picture at the weekend, the two tip lads on top of you. But you kind of seem to enjoy the whole battle, whether it's between... if having a few words with lads or getting stuck in, you enjoy that.
I suppose, look, it's probably always this, we'll call it sledging or whatever, is always probably made out to be a lot worse than it is. There's always a lot of respect between players too, and I think everyone is well aware of the fact that after the whistle is blown, after 70 minutes, everyone kind of respects each other. But yeah, it is enjoyable, I suppose, having a battle with a back line, let's say, you're obviously marking someone one-on-one, but you're kind of your forward unit is trying to break down a whole defensive unit, so it's enjoyable trying to find ways around it and trying to break them down. Yeah,
is it great too, like when you can have, in the middle, in the heat of battle, you can have a bit of crack with a lad like with Parkour last year. Even though you're against each other, you still can have a little bit of, whether it's a funny comment,
yeah,
to each other.
Yeah, 100%. Like, look, I suppose it's serious enough for so much of the time that I suppose there's no harm to be a bit lighthearted with it too at times. Yeah.
Just growing up, am I right saying we were chatting to Paddy before, you said your dad was a referee and you used to go to all the games with him. So was that the earliest memories?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he would have refed for a good 2 years at club games in Kerry. Like, so we probably would have been going all around the county with him, to be fair. And that's probably where our introduction came from. And our parents would have always went to the Kerry games as well, so we would have always tagged along with them. Yeah, so I suppose we had an early introduction to GAA, yeah.
And do you feel like it's all... I can remember you coming on and scoring the goal against Monaghan. It's certainly my first memory of you as a senior. Do you feel like it's all flew even since then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd be going into my... sixth season with Kerry this year. So, yeah, the time has flown by. And I suppose it really keeps you driven, because, you see more and more players that you would have played with, like, retiring, coming to the end of their career. So really conscious of the fact that, like, the years do move away from you and you just have to try and make the most of them while you have them. Yeah,
you kind of have to grow up quick, you're 24, that was only a few years ago, your dad. And is that I'm wondering, when as a dad, did you ask your own dad for much advice? Was he throwing the ball into the
premature? No. Look, I suppose I'm like, my parents would have always been very supportive, but never would have pushed us into anything. So I suppose that'll be definitely something that I'll try and take from them, that I'd be happy enough to whatever Ogie ends up doing to support him with it.
It does give you, I know it's an overused word, but a bit of perspective. Like, when you come back from a match, you'd probably see him and he'd be messing and he wouldn't know what's going on. And
absolutely, yeah. And like, I think it's not to be mistaken for that your focus is taken away from Kerry or anything like that, but like it is a nice release to have, because as I said, there's a lot of pressure, there's so much focus on being an intercounty player, that it's nice to have some form of release. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Is he playing, kicking football around the place, or
he's more of a farmer now at the moment? Okay. So that's kind of the line he's gone down. But I know, he there'd be plenty of pressure on him, so I definitely won't be putting it on him. Yeah.
Does John Deere is knocking around?
Exactly.
That's about. Do you have a farming background?
Both of my grandparents would have been farmers, but Sean's dad is a farmer, so that's where it's coming from. Yeah.
Okay, well, he'll be a hard worker. So.
Well, we'll see.
Just a little quick fire round where it might be just right. One
One word.
Question, yeah. If that's all right. So, okay. Favourite sport to watch outside of the GA?
We'll go for snooker.
Okay. So you were watching it at the last few days?
Yeah. It's probably been a slow enough start to the World Championships, really. There hasn't been too many close games. Well, there are a few of the big guns knocked out already, I suppose. But, yeah, Ronnie and John Higgins are still involved, so I'm happy enough, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, it was probably a bit wild with the protester coming on and then with your man hitting the break against Ronnie.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
He made a bit of a fool of himself, to be fair.
Yeah, well, it was hammered in the end. Ronaldo or Messi?
Messi.
Current independent player not from Kerry, who you admire as a player?
That's tricky, no. Kieran Kilkenny, maybe?
Okay. Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
And what would be your biscuit on site?
Probably a chocolate hobnob.
Okay. Best spot in Killarney for a pint?
The Golden Nugget.
What's a sponsor?
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it local. Kieran Donnelly said you were a good singer, I remember in an interview before, so what would be your karaoke song?
I'm going to have to move on from it because I think my people are getting sick of hearing it. The Night Visiting Song is a song I always sing by Luke Kelly, so... Okay. Have to try and learn a new one this year.
Move on to Sprout with the Wings. And you say you play a bit of golf, so your dream four ball of anyone?
I'll take myself and Shane in, right? He'd be my normal golfing partner. And we'd be taking on Shane Lowry and Duncan Davidson, another friend of mine.
Great stuff there from Niall and David Clifford up in Croke Park, but we are going to turn our attention to hurling now. And Niall, Waterford nearly had Limerick.
What a game, Lee. I'm telling you, only we had David Clifford today, we'd have been devoting more of the show to hurling than we would to football, because I'm telling you now, the hurling was better than the football at the weekend. And that Waterford-Limerick game, just like Limerick get off to this flying start. They're up by 7 or 8 points early on, and you're thinking, do you know, Waterford are toast. This is game over, ball burst. And like Waterford just, you could see it, you know, that this was David Fitzgerald. And I'm just imagining this now, that Davey had these boys during the league. They were training like animals because they were so fit, and so they were horsed into Limerick yesterday. And, you know, they were so fit now, like incredibly fit and bombing up and down the field. And, you know, they kind of caught Limerick, whether it was Limerick on an off day or whether Waterford's tactics caught them, but they did. They caught them and they had the chances to win that game. And I'd say Davy Fitzgerald now he'll have had a sleepless night last night just thinking, we should have done this, because they missed so many chances for a finish. Neil Montgomery had a lot of wides. Fitzgerald that came on had a wide. Desi Hutchinson had wides. Even Austin Gleeson, ones that he kicked over the bar. And Tom Byrne goes in and fouls Nicky Quaid. And, you know, only 2 points for a finish. Like, so they should have got something out of this game. But huge, huge positives for Waterford. It was, you know, it was, I know in recent times, a lot of people have been giving out saying hurling's gone too high scoring. And like you could see that in Clare in tip game. What was it,
5-22 to 3-23.
Do you know, like, this is free scoring, and it's there's nearly too many scores because the ball is out of play half the time. Yeah. Like, just literally because of that. But this was, do you know, this was hard hitting stuff, and you had to earn every score that you got, and just an unbelievable game of hurling. And I wrote an article yesterday calling it the 1 minute of madness, and it was from the Aaron Gillan penalty, and he saves the penalty. Billy Nolan saves the penalty. Tom Byrne, who was the smallest man on the pitch, and well, not the smallest man on the pitch, but not compared to Garold Hegarty, he's not a big man. He runs out with the ball and floors Garold Hegarty. And this is Tom Byrne, do you know, after coming on as a sub, do you know, wasn't started, Tadhg Dé Bárcha, jeez, I feel off for him. His third serious injury in as many years. Two cruciates and an Achilles is what David Fitzgerald was saying yesterday. So just shocking stuff for him. But Tom Byrne came in and changed the game. Jamie's brother bombing around the place like Jamie, strong and just an edge to him. Do you know, and he comes out with the ball, floors Garold Hegarty, 6'6" from onto the ground. And then the play bursts on. There's a Kyle Hayes wins the ball, and he hits it down between Barry Nash and Jack Fagan. Barry Nash takes Jack Fagan out of it with an elbow, and you're going mad at this stage. Then eventually the ball pulled out over the sideline. Garold Hegarty comes out. He floors Darragh Lyons, who again is half his size. he stays going and Austin Gleeson is about to come on as a sub and he hasn't even entered the match yet. And Hegarty's follow through brings him into Gleeson and the two of them are getting stuck into it. Like, and should we know Austin? Austin never shies back. In fairness to him, he wasn't the instigator this time. But then the Waterford mentor punches girl Hegarty in the chest. The Limerick doctor gets a yellow card. Liam Gordon, I'd say, I was trying to find out how many yellow cards he gave. It was definitely up in the double figures, I'd say 13 or 14. Just one of those games where the hair was standing on the back of your neck and just Waterford, they'll be kicking themselves because they could have had it.
No, I mean, any game where the doctor gets a yellow card, you know there's going to be something into it. You mentioned Tipperary v Clare, but you thought Clare conceded some soft goals.
Very soft goals, and it was a difficult day for Eamon Foody making his debut in championship debut in the goals. Do you know, should a sideline, Jace Ford scored sideline straight into the goals, that's a present. Another one, John Conlon was more at fault than the goalie, but Jake Morris gets another present. And you know, you're conceding goals like that. You nearly, the saying is goals win games, but like this was so high scoring, it was crazy scoring. And but Tip, the goals did win the games because they won by is five or six there. And you know, they had to did two extra goals in Clare. Clare probably did nearly more of the hurling, and the goals they scored were probably, do you know, Mark Rogers' goal was unbelievable, and his second goal too, brilliant stuff made McCarthy. But Clare were just, the soft goals caught them. And in fairness to Foody, his puckouts were brillianter than that. And just, you know, the mistakes and a tough day for him. So you'd feel for him, but it didn't. Watching and there were so many games on yesterday. I don't know how keeping up with them all. I really was in a trance, as I said at the start of the show, because that was on straight after Limerick Waterford. Then you have the football at the same time.
Yeah.
So this was, it was hard to keep track of it all, but just watching that, it did not seem to be at the level Waterford and Limerick were now. So, they'll have to lift it, Tip and Clare again, coming down the track.
And then elsewhere, Galway beat Wexford, 24 points to 212.
Yeah, and Wexford got the dream start, getting the two goals. Conor McDonald got the first one, Limo McGovern got the second one, and Limo McGovern, has to be said, in defeat, gave a tremendous performance, as he has done for years. For Wexford, you know, leading the fight against Galway. But, you know, they got the dream start, but at the same time, Lee Chin was injured, Damien Reck got injured in the warm-up or was injured coming into it and couldn't play. Wexford can't afford to lose lads like this, and Galway just pointed them out of the game, basically 24 points to 212. And, you know, it was nearly over 10 minutes into the second half. So disappointing from Wexford, just a flat in the second half. But you can understand it with the men that were missing. But look, one concern Henry and Galway will have is that they didn't get near scoring a goal and never even looked like scoring a goal. So that's definitely a concern for them.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, up in Belfast, Antrim got a draw against Dublin, so close to taking a scalp there.
Yeah, I'd say Darren Gleeson, like Dave Fitzgerald, at least he got the point, but he'll be thinking that is the one that got away, because they were 6 points up at one stage in the second half in front of a home crowd, like the Belfast crowd going mad, thinking, you know, this is today. And I did think coming into it, the Dublin war there for the take, and, you know, missing some key men this year, Chris Crummy, Keane O'Callaghan, their team doesn't look as strong. And you know, it did come down to Donald Burke, who has been their saviour for many years. The last two or three years, he's been the leading light, and he was the man that saved them with a goal. Look, Antrim, they'll be disappointed because Paul Boyle got a late point, and you're thinking, you know, this is going to do it for them. But, you know, they couldn't get over the line in the end. And but look, positives definitely for Antrim. Dublin, you know, they'll have to pick it up. But yes, on the other side, Kilkenny gave Westmead a hammering. So it's going to be a fight between Antrim, Dublin and Wexford. You'd imagine Kilkenny and Galway will be safe bets, even though it is early to be counting chickens, but that's what you'd imagine. And you know, for Antrim, I'd say they will think looking at Dublin and looking at Wexford, do you know, we have a chance here, do you know? So, yeah, maybe just the Munster man saying that, it's Munster does look a bit more competitive, but as Leinster people often say, there's usually a Leinster team in the final, so that is plenty to look forward to.
Yeah, thanks, Niall, for giving us the lay of the land. That is actually all we have time for now. We did manage to fit a lot into that show. Remember to like, share, subscribe to the GAR, and we'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.